The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christianity is always portrayed so negatively on television and in the movies. Well, there is a popular program that just completed a six-year run on ABC. We discussed this show 3 weeks ago. It's called Lost, as if you didn't know. Film critic Mark Boubian joined us to talk about some very positive Christian themes and portrayals of Christian characters in Lost. Now, generally, Mark joins us every few months. Today, we are breaking from tradition by bringing him back on our program only 3 weeks later, jumpin' Jiminy. The reason is simple. When we talked before, the story of Lost had not yet been concluded. Now that it's over, fans all over the country are trying to figure out just what the Sam Hill happened. Naturally, Mark has some thoughts of his own. Mark, welcome back to our program.
Thanks for having me, Bob. It's always great to be here.
It's good to have you. Now, we also have somebody else joining us today, one of the KCBQ board ops, whom I've worked with for years. He used to do my show, now does the Rick Amato show. Paul Drivas, a big fan of Lost. I remember when Paul first started watching the show, I would see him only on Sundays, and he'd go through something like two complete seasons a week. Paul, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Good. Now, Mark, I understand you had something else you wanted to talk about since you're a broader film critic who watches other things besides
Lost.
Yeah,
well, it just so happens that this week I watched a movie called The Book of Eli, which came out in January and is just being released on Blu-ray and DVD this week. And I thought it was a little bit relevant to the discussion about Lost, and I think it may even be significant. Now, The Book of Eli, like Lost, is not a Christian production by any means. Nobody said this is a Christian show. Nobody said this is a Christian production.
They don't wrap it up by turning on Billy Graham at the end.
Exactly. There's no altar call, and it's backed by a major studio. In the case of Book of Eli, it's Warner. ABC Studios, owned by Disney, is who does Lost. And it had a bunch of A-list actors like Gary Oldman, Denzel Washington, even Malcolm McDowell. Not totally A-list, but still up there.
Of Clockwork Orange fame.
Which, yeah.
Star Trek Generations infame.
Okay, I don't remember
infamous.
That one.
He was the villain in Star Trek Generations.
I guess you'd say he's infamous in Clockwork Orange, too, then.
Yes,
okay, so Book of Eli is also an R-rated movie, not something typically that you would think of as a Christian movie. But
I don't know, that Old Testament can be awfully R-rated.
Yes, I know. I agree with that,
Cecil
Bob.
B. DeMille
just
used
one of those
to,
things.
Back before they were allowed to put sex and violence in movies, Cecil B. DeMille figured out how to do it
early.
He said, we'll just call it a biblical.
Yeah, exactly. And he just has to do it accurately, and boom, there you go. So, yeah, that's the way it works. So, but people didn't go to this movie thinking that it's going to be a Christian storyline, and it even is such a good movie that you don't go thinking, hey, this is a Christian story. There's something about this. It's about Christianity. But the story's basic premise is that it's about a guy who is carrying a book in a post-apocalyptic setting. He's got the last copy of this book, and he's carrying it to the West. And the book is the Bible. And
which was a very intriguing idea.
Yeah.
I remember really enjoying this movie.
And he actually says that he's been told by a supernatural voice. He has a supernatural experience, not on camera, but earlier. And that's how he finds the Bible and how he knows he's supposed to carry it and he's under protection. We actually see that protection occur at least once or twice in the movie where he is not injured. Like, he's shot in the back of the head at one point. You see the bullet enter his shirt, but not harm him in any way. I saw it on Blu-ray. If you saw it on DVD, you didn't see it enter his shirt, unfortunately. But yes, that's the good thing about Blu-ray. So this, what I think is significant about this movie is that it didn't simply employ Christian symbolism, which is what I come and talk about a lot on the show when I come in. There's not simply Christian theme. That's another thing I talk about. But this acknowledged and accepted Christianity from the bottom to the top, from its story to its theme to its symbol. Everywhere you look, there is Christianity, and it's as though Christianity is a real, living, breathing thing that exists and is accepted as true. And that's something you don't normally see in films. And I feel that in Lost, that was one of the great draws of Lost, was that they also took on Christianity and said, let's actually acknowledge that it exists and accept it, and accept that there are Christian people, there are Christian things going on, there's Christian storylines that we can incorporate and bring it all together into this one production. Now, it wasn't purely Christian. Lost wasn't purely Christian, but still, Lost really takes Christianity on and brings it into the story and brings it in at many levels. And that kind of connects it to the Book of Eli is doing the same thing. I think the Book of Eli is a little more blatant than Lost even, but still, it's good to see that in these two very successful productions. For example, obviously Lost was exceptionally successful. I mean, millions of people watched the show. The final episode made something upwards of $80 million from its commercials. Just that one episode.
Do you know how it did compared to other famous finales? Like, I know the last episode of MASH had been, at that time, the most watched
episode. We'd have to adjust
episode.
That for inflation, because that was quite a while ago.
Right.
Seinfeld was a pretty big, and I don't know how well that did. I think it was probably... Now, it was a lot shorter,
well,
so
ratings,
it probably didn't do as well.
It did a little poor in the script. It was one of the worst episodes of Seinfeld I ever saw.
I'm not surprised. I mean, the thing is Lost was good because they had the story kind of pre-designed, pre-written, and they're fleshing it out as they go. And so they're not going to blow the last episode at the last second in Lost. And that was one of the things that I think I had a lot of faith in the writers for, because I knew they had it planned out ahead of time. So it was a good story. But so to answer your question, though, no, I don't know how it did against other TV shows, but let's compare it against movies. Now,
Paul looks like he knows.
You do? Okay.
Lost had about 13 million people watch the final episode. I mean, if you average it out over the whole 2.5 hours, didn't do very well compared to, say, Seinfeld and Cheer and MASH had about 100 million people.
Okay.
But I think that's kind of the nature of Lost, because some people, they lost a lot of viewers along the way, because if you miss a couple episodes, it's like walking out of a movie for an hour and then walking back in.
Well, also, that's not taking into account how many people watch it on the internet.
Exactly. And
people
DVRs.
Like me, frustrated with the buffering and the streaming and wanting to pick up my computer and throwing it out the window while I was trying to watch it.
Or people like me who actually watched the whole show up until the last season on Blu-ray and never actually turned on the TV until the very last season. I only watched the last season because it was coming to an end and I had to, and I didn't want to get any spoilers. I would have rather waited for the Blu-ray to come out, but I figured I'd hear what happened.
Somebody would have shot off his big mouth.
Yeah, so like us in the show, for example.
Here's our disclaimer. If you don't want to hear how Lost ends, turn the radio off.
Or just turn it down really low. You still want to hear us talk, of course.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of great stuff to say. But compared to films, though, Lost making $80 million. Now, I already talked about Book of Eli. In January, which is generally one of the worst money-making times of the year. Movies don't make money in January. That's a clearinghouse month. January and February, that's when they dump the garbage, basically. $90 million is what it pulled in. Compare that to Memorial Day weekend, which is the biggest weekend of the year, one of the four big, huge weekends of the year. Prince of Persia, which was the... What do they call it? Tent stake movie, which is, I guess, appropriate for Prince of Persia. But that was their big movie. It made $54 million, which was insanely disappointing. So
has that gotten bad reviews too?
I hadn't heard much about that. And I think if you combine it even with Sex in the City, which was the number two movie,
that
it still
got horrendous
doesn't
reviews.
Yeah. Yeah, so even if you compare it to movies which traditionally make much more money than the TV single episodes of TV shows, Lost did exceptionally well, and so Lost is very well watched. And this is a great trend because it shows that people are, you don't have to go, Christians are dumb and make sure that you deny Christianity and make these terrible stories about Christianity. You can make stories that acknowledge Christ, acknowledge Christianity, acknowledge the Bible, and people are going to watch them.
Oh, and they actually had some whole priests in Lost who were good characters. These days in Hollywood, the priest is some sadist child molester, and that's right. The only portrayal of a priest that they have. Okay, I'll be back with film critic Mark Boobian and Paul Drivas. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Well, some of you probably recognize that as the group Drive Shaft, the fictitious group for the program Lost, sung by our favorite Charlie. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today is a pop culture edition. We're here with film critic Mark Boobian, joining us for a second time to figure out the mysteries of Lost. Now, before we continue, last week, I was in the middle of a discussion about Hebrew prophecy right as we went off the air. We were discussing Daniel's calendar of the 70 weeks of years, predicting the coming of Christ. Now, I have not forgotten about Daniel, and we will continue that discussion next week. Also, for those of you who listen in to hear news commentary, I realize this was an extremely important news week, and if you're just dying to hear the opinions of your old pal Bob, I did substitute host for the Rick Amato Show only a few nights ago. This program is posted to Rick's website. You can download it at any time to hear 2 solid hours of news analysis, including Israel's battle with the terrorists at sea, the lies about that situation, and the truth about that situation. Just find AmatoTalk.com, the June 2nd program, guest host Bob Siegel. Meanwhile, let's continue our discussion of Lost.
Thanks, Bob. Now, one of the things I liked about Lost is that also the one of the great things, not just the acknowledgement of Christianity, but the lack of answers. Their willingness to actually ask questions or to present questions and not answer them.
And now, do you have a list in your mind of threads that they did not tie up? Because I can think of a lot of questions have that were not tied up at all in the final episode.
Well, I mean, I think one of the one that bugs me the most is Michael and his son, I can't remember.
Walt.
Okay,
they never explained why Walt was able to think about polar bears and then a polar bear appeared.
Yeah, and Walt is supernatural. And it's significant because the Dharma Initiative people are kidnapped him.
The others using the Dharma Initiative series.
Yeah, I still am not. I'd have to go back and double check. I actually thought it was the Dharma people.
No, maybe,
you're right, because they were already gone.
But they were in the Dharma dorms.
They kidnapped him because he was significant
in some
way.
And he had the ability to be in more than one place at a time, they said. And they never did anything.
They sort of let that trail
Paul's
off.
Paul's got an idea here.
Well, there was also other characters that had psychic abilities, like Desmond and couple other characters. Hurley could see ghosts, and Charlie Miles could talk to ghosts. So that could have just been another manifestation of another character that had psychic abilities. Being so young, maybe he hadn't developed his yet. So we saw Miles as a child when he learned how to talk to ghosts the first time as just an 11, 12-year-old boy, it kind of freaked him out because he didn't know what was going on. So it could have been that they were just showing that these aren't the only characters in the people in the world that have those powers. Other people do as well.
That could be. Good point.
Right, and I think that's also another interesting thing is that they can allow this character to just appear and then they don't have any real plans for him. He just sort of is there as a character, and then he's going to go away before his whole story is told.
Another thing they didn't tie together is there was a flashback where Libby was in the insane asylum as a patient behind Hurley, and they never explained that.
Right. They imply an explanation that, well, we know that she checked herself in because she says in the final season, now I don't know what they call it. They call it a flash sideways, but now we know what it
but
is.
But now we're not supposed to believe the flash sideways really happened. So.
No, it did, but it didn't happen exactly the way.
So you think we might have been seeing the flash sideways when we saw Libby? What do you think?
No. We saw her in the insane asylum, I believe.
In real time,
but
not the flash
sideways. Was in the insane asylum, so in the flash sideways, we see her again in the insane asylum.
Right.
Because
right.
That's what her life was.
The flash sideways wasn't a complete alternate reality. They were still in the basic part of their life when they would have landed in LA. There was some slight changes, but Jack was still a doctor. Hurley still won the lottery and owned the chicken places. So
right.
Now here's a question.
They were still who they were.
This is a question I had about the flash sideways because, two things. In the last episode, we are told by Jack's dad, I guess we're supposed to believe that this is some kind of purgatory that they've gone through or some place to work out their lives before going on to heaven. Jack's dad said this is a place you created for yourselves. So
to find each other.
So did they create it by setting off that bomb, which they were trying to do? Because Juliet had said before she died, or Miles heard her say right after she died, it worked. So that always led me to believe that the flash sideways was a real flash sideways. So were they combining? On one hand, they did create another time reality, but on the other hand, this time reality kind of dipped into eternity in heaven? Were they trying to do both?
No, I actually believe that after seeing the last episode that they clarified that the flash sideways was not a flash anywhere except to
purgatory. Just to throw us
they're
off.
They're dead at this point.
Right.
You know, when we see that and they're just mixing
it
in.
They're dead, but did the kind of dead reality get created by what they tried to do with the bomb?
No, I don't think so. I think that's just as they explained in the final episode, the creation in their minds or whatever in their souls to find each other.
Hey, then what
and
did
they
Juliet
just, the way with? They just happened to throw us kind of a red herring by implying that it was the bomb that did it.
But I can understand the red herring, but what does it mean when Juliet says it worked?
Well, in the last episode, she's trying to get a candy bar out of actually it's Sawyer who's trying to get a candy bar out of a machine.
Yeah.
And Juliet walks in and tells him, you know, the machine's broken, unplug it, plug it back in, and the candy bar will drop. He does that, it drops, and she says, it worked.
Oh, so that's it?
Yeah, but she's dead at that point.
Oh, my
and it
gosh.
Makes sense
you think that's the interpretation of it worked, Paul?
Yeah.
That's quite a red herring, boy.
Yeah, but see, she's dead at that point when Miles would hear that.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
that's a possibility. That didn't occur to me either. I'll have to go back and watch that episode again.
Jeez.
I just watched it.
That's kind of a ripoff, though. I don't know.
Well, that's one of the reasons people were kind of disappointed.
I was. And I have to say, I love the series. I was kind of disappointed in this last episode, Paul.
See, I was not at all. I thought it was one of my favorite episodes of the whole series because it had one of my favorite messages of it, and the fact that they couldn't go to heaven until they were all together again, so they had to create this place. And to me, that was just a great message that even though along our lives we're going to lose people, eventually we're going to be back together again. And for these people, it was critical for them to get back together again because that's how they were able to move on. And to me, that just it gave all the characters that we grew to love over the last 6 years, it gave them the happy ending they deserved and we wanted for all of them.
Well,
that's
I want to see some of them with a hat. I liked seeing Shannon and Saeed back together again, even though she was a twit. But I was sad for him when she had died. But yes, I obviously love a positive portrayal of heaven. Obviously, I guess there's the part of me that's compartmentalizing this. And as a Christian, yeah, I love the Christian message. But also just as one who likes drama, I kind of felt like they really set us up for this flash sideways. And I thought, you guys can correct me if I'm mistaken, I thought the producers had gone on record as saying we're not going to have one of these endings where you find out that people were really dead.
No, they actually said the people on the island were not dead.
Okay, so...
So just, that was what the producers had promised, and they're not on the island in the...
Now, I have heard sideways. One of the... Now, I've recovered. I've had a little bit of healing these last couple of weeks. One of the things that made me extremely disappointed is I was hearing people throw out all kinds of interpretations to the ending. One was that the whole six-year series was just a dream that Jack was having, and I guess... That kind of annoying possible interpretation perturbed me more than anything. Having watched it again, I'm pretty convinced that that's not what was going on. That would have been the ripoff. That would have made that time that Dallas was all a dream seem like nothing.
It's the Bob Newhart ending, you know.
Well, Newhart was making fun of Dallas, yeah. So I'll allow Bob Newhart.
The whole show. Yeah, but I mean, it's, Bob Newhart was a comedy.
Well,
so
Dallas wiped
funny.
Out a whole season because Patrick Duffy wanted to return. Okay, but we won't wipe out a whole Bob Siegel show. We will be right back. You're listening to an analysis of Lost. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. On staff with KCBQ is Paul Drivis, joining us in the studio today, along with film critic Mark Boobian, discussing the phenomenon called Lost.
And Bob, to give you a little consolation about the end, that it's not all in Jack's head. After they aired Lost, the final episode of Lost, they did a show with Jimmy Kimmel, and part of the show was they had these alternate endings.
I saw some of that. Yeah, that
so
was
they
pretty
were fake,
funny.
Of course. Yeah. They were jokes. But one of them was Bob Newhart wakes up in bed with Evangeline.
With Kate?
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So obviously, that you know, that they...
Oh, but a lot of my friends were saying, oh, it's just like Shelter Island. There's three different ways to interpret it. Yeah. Now, I was okay with that in Shelter Island because in a two-hour movie, they can mess with our head all they want. After 6 years of getting to know a lot of characters, you don't want to think that they were all imaginary and in somebody's mind. You don't do that on a six-year TV program.
Making that joke and having the producers actually there in the skit itself.
That was their way of reassuring us.
Yeah, they're just, you know, obviously, right, reassuring us. Now, one other thing that I noticed in the Jimmy Kimmel show, and before I had seen that show, I got an email newsletter and one about Christian stuff, and one of the sections was about how Jimmy Kimmel acknowledged Christianity in Lost. But when I watched the show, I was actually disappointed with what he said. And let me see if I can find it here. Okay, yeah. Okay, so Jimmy Kimmel actually gives his interpretation of Lost. He says that it was really all about Jack, period. It's his test in life. And...
Then what about the 14 other characters?
Yeah, right. I mean, and I can accept that maybe part of the theme, because anything we talk about here, we're not going to, you can't encompass all of what Lost is about, because Lost was about many things. I mean, we just have to admit that. It took 6 years. There's many different themes that came into play throughout the series, and there's not going to be just one specific message. But, you know, everybody has their key main primary interpretation. So, but what Jimmy Kimmel said is many religions teach that life is a test and what we do, good or evil, affects the test. Okay, actually, yeah, and he says in a lot of religions, Christianity being one of them, the idea is that life is a test. You go through your life, and if you're good, you go to heaven. And if you're bad, you don't.
Well, a lot of people think that is the message of Christianity.
And what was interesting, it's not exactly. I'm glad you said that, Bob. Kudos to you.
That's also a religious analysis from the guy that helped create the Man Show.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah, we can't give him too much credit. But there are people that really think that. And I thought
I'd say
it was,
probably most people think that that's the message of Christianity, that rather than it being about mercy and forgiveness, it's about earning your way to heaven.
And it's really not everybody's fault, I don't think, either, because Christianity tends to portray itself as being about doing good, doing the right thing, and going to heaven.
Wait,
now,
Mark, are you saying Christians sometimes make dumb, stupid, idiotic statements when they should be closing their big, idiotic mouths?
Did I say that?
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I said it.
Yes, actually, that's exactly what I was saying. And I was raised Catholic, and I think one of the shocks of being raised Catholic was that I went to Catholic school for 6 years.
That'll do it.
8 years, I guess.
That'll cure the bejesus of Christianity.
Yeah, and the thing is they never taught me that Jesus died for our sins, that we're forgiven.
Well, Mark, there's probably a good reason for that. They may not have known that Jesus died for our sins.
Maybe not. Now, however, Lost, actually, though, one of the key Christian aspects of Lost is that they really rely a lot on Catholicism for their Christian imagery. So,
Catholics have a lot of good imagery. So
that's true.
It may have been no more than that. It just made for good television.
Right. And I think any church you get involved with that is really just culturally a church, they don't teach the message of Christianity per se. They teach you the cultural elements of.
And Protestants don't have much to brag about in the architecture department.
Right.
So we got to give a nod to the Catholics for that.
Yeah. And so it's not just to rag on Catholicism, but just to point out that you can see why people would interpret Christianity as being about doing good and not doing bad. You know, don't do evil, do good, and you get into heaven. And that, again, as you said, Bob, that's not at all what it's about. It's actually about exactly the opposite of that, that we do bad things and we are still forgiven, that Christ died for us.
And that was
sins.
Quite a theme of Lost, because it seemed like if Christianity was one of the themes, redemption was definitely
absolutely. A huge theme. Like, let's take Saeed, who everybody liked. And he was the most horrible.
Lovable terrorist.
Yes, he did the most terrible things. I mean, and in the last season, he gives in to his
evil impulses.
Yeah,
he looked like
he was
becoming pure evil at the end.
Yeah. And now what's interesting is they dunk at the beginning of the season, he's shot and he's dying, and they put him in this well to heal him, the supernatural healing. When they take him out of the well, he's got his arms wide like he's on a cross.
Oh, like
I mean,
a Christ
the image
figure.
Is very, very vivid. I mean, that was no accident. The dude came out looking like he's on the cross. And so obviously they're implying that maybe there's more to Saeed than meets the eye. And we are rewarded at the end of the show when he blows himself up to save everyone else.
That's true.
And he makes this loving sacrifice. So he's like Christ in that he makes a loving sacrifice to save everyone else. But now, this would even, we were talking about acts, the acts that we do getting us into heaven. I heard a lot about Saeed being redeemed and all that stuff, but it's not just about the act that he did, but the act that he did showed what his heart, where his heart was. He loved these people, and he flipped. He didn't just give in to evil. It showed that his heart was tending towards wanting redemption, wanting to do the right thing, wanting to be a good person. And I think that desire is what draws us closer to God in Christianity. It is that crying out and recognition that what we've done is evil and we want to turn our lives around. That is part of becoming Christians.
You know, another thing that was kind of interesting is the devil or the smoke monster or Locke or whatever you want to call him. One of the ways he tempted Saeed over to the dark side was with Nadia, the love of his life. Interestingly enough, he doesn't end up with Nadia. He's back with Shannon. I don't know if that had any significance.
Yeah, and I know obviously that I would have a hard time. I don't think anybody would have missed that because it was obvious that he was pining for Nadia, but his real love, and he only expresses it at the very, you know, he says, "I love you," and then she shot dead like 2 seconds later.
Yeah, good timing.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can see that he really did develop a true love for her in a pure way, where I think a lot of his relationship with Nadia was guilt-driven, that he had tortured her, and it was his friend, and, you know, he had done some terrible things to her, and so his love for her was sort of not quite as pure as the love he had for Shannon.
Yeah. Let me ask Paul, what kinds of redemption stories in Lost jumped out at you the most?
Well, Saeed is the biggest one. I also like Charlie's story of redemption coming back from his drug addiction. Sawyer, I think one of my favorite themes in Lost is not only character development, but character evolution. And I saw a lot of that with Sawyer, too.
Sawyer was a wonderful character because you just liked him more and more, even though he was portrayed as kind of a bad guy. And Benjamin Linus is the best villain I have ever seen. I'm still not sure if the guy repented at the end. I guess he did, because he and Locke seemed to have a good closure at the end where Locke forgave him. But he still went and killed Charles Whitmore at the end. And that was after his big repentance scene from a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I know. He still has that sort of good and evil in him that he's struggling with. However, and actually in the last episode, the final moments of the last episode, he refuses to enter the church. He says, "I'm not quite ready."
He still has a few things
yet
to work out. Okay, yeah. And we have a few sponsors to work out, and we'll be right back. Good projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined with Paul Drivas and Mark Booby, and we're discussing Lost. Okay, gentlemen, if you'll indulge me for just one more second, I'm going to stubbornly cling one last grasp of the straw to the Flash sideways. Because Daniel Faraday, a few weeks before the ending, said, "I created this." He was aware that this was the result of his experiment. Are we supposed to just say, well, he's dead, what does he know? He thinks that's where he is.
I don't think he said he created it. He said, "I think I set off a nuclear bomb."
Well, he seemed to be talking about finding the correct timeline. And then his mother turns to Desmond and says, "Now, what do you want to go and mess with this timeline for? You have a really nice life." And then in the finale, when they all gather, remember, Faraday doesn't go with them.
And the mom
and his mother
says,
"Are you going to leave my son behind?"
Right. Now, are you going to take him from
me? Okay, so I'm open to either one of you. What do you think that's all about?
I still think that, first off, I think that they have not accepted the opportunity to move on, and that as a little fact that you left out, Bob, is that she murdered her son
yes.
in a back store in the when they're back in time.
But it seems like she wants to be with him.
Yes, now. And so she never got that, and she has that guilt that she gets to carry with her all her life. And now in this timeline, she has her son, and I think she's relishing that and doesn't want it taken away. So that's kind of her story. And then Daniel hasn't quite come to grips with understanding what's going on, and he thinks he set off a nuclear bomb, but he hasn't. He's not sure. And,
okay.
And he sees the redheaded girl that he was in love
right,
with.
Right, Charlotte.
Charlotte, yeah. And he kind of is like kind of developing that, starting to enter into developing that relationship.
We saw something similar with Hurley. It took him a few times to get the full picture. He saw bits and pieces, didn't quite understand what was going on till the second time he kissed Libby. So I think that Faraday didn't quite get the whole picture at first. He kind of knew something was going on, but he didn't understand the extent of what it was and what the current timeline he was in truly was.
Right. Okay, now, by the way, there's a major paradox with Hurley that I think was just an oversight. There was an earlier episode, I don't remember when, where Hurley mentions to somebody that Libby and a lot of the other people that have died have all come to visit him. But then in the episode where they finally brought Libby back, he's standing over her grave saying, "How come I've been visited by every spirit but you?"
Right.
I think that one the producers just slipped
they may
up
have just,
somehow.
Yeah, that would have been a mistake.
Yeah,
in,
I don't
in
know
the
how
writing,
they. Now, the other thing I wanted to say about Hurley, now I had heard this, I didn't read it, so maybe one of you can verify it, or maybe we've got some internet lost geek listening that could call in and tell us. But I had heard that originally we were talking about people saying the whole show was meant to revolve around Jack. I had heard the opposite, and I had to bite my lips to ever tell you this, Mark. Aren't you proud of me? I had heard that the whole show was originally going to be all about Hurley, and then they expanded it and brought in the other characters. But I was of the opinion from the beginning that Hurley would take over for Jacob, and that's exactly what he ended up doing.
Yeah, actually, two episodes prior to the end, he says, "I'm sure glad it wasn't me." And I knew when he said that, that he's going to end up with that.
I always believed it was
Hurley.
Him, not just from what I heard, but also he seemed more pure than the other characters.
He was the one true pure character throughout the whole show.
He
everyone else
had
their
agenda.
Flaws. No, at one point or another, every character did something horrible to someone else, except for Hurley. Hurley was pretty much pure good. He always, and he was the one character, the main character, that actually wasn't responsible for somebody's death.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
Well, unless you consider the fact that he was unlucky and meteors fell out of the sky and blew people up. And
one of my
like
favorite
that.
Episodes, by the way.
Oh, that episode with the numbers was the best flashback that they had on that show, I think.
Yeah, that's great.
Especially at the end where they fanned over and you saw those numbers printed on the hatch. That was awesome.
I think the way to put Hurley had his issues. I mean, for example, his weight being something that they brought in, and then his life with his mom and that kind of his nervousness about girls. But Bob, you used to use a term about a friend that we have. You said you're a man with no guile. And I think that really describes
Hurley
perfectly.
He was my friend Ed Allam, who passed away at a young age. He was definitely a man without any guile.
Yeah. So, and I think that really nails Hurley. It's not, from a Christian perspective, you wouldn't say he's without sin.
Right.
He's not without flaw, but he has no guile. And that's really the purity that we see in Hurley. That
absolutely.
He's kind of pure of heart, and he really.
I was going to say
he's
a great character, but pretty much just about every character on that show, with the exception of Anna Lucia, were great characters.
Yeah, I'm really glad she was. She was not in the church at the end. That was my favorite.
You know
part.
Who else wasn't in there was Mr. Echo, who I really would have liked to have seen more of. He was one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, and well, you know what though, Echo really denied his Christianity, at the end, before the smoke monster killed him.
I wasn't exactly sure I read it that way. I felt that he just said he made the best choices he could. What do you think, Paul?
Actually, I would prefer to stay with having something intended by the producers, but I believe I read somewhere that it was a contract dispute with the actor is why they couldn't have him back.
Well, you know, it just seemed like they introduced an awful lot of characters in season two that just one season later were gone. I mean,
right.
Bernard was the only guy that they kept. Well, Ben was introduced in season two. But Anna Lucia, Libby, that was because, wasn't it because they were pulled over?
They were both arrested for drunk driving during season two.
It's too bad that here was a program that actually had a story. They weren't making it up from week to week like 24. And it's too bad that contract things had to get in the way of the purity of their story. Because who knows what we might have seen if that had not happened.
In a way, but you know, Anna Lucia was a crummy character. And Libby was a good character. But the tragedy of her loss, I think that really made Hurley's character so much more compelling and appealing.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's
I never stopped feeling bad for Hurley about that.
And I do have to say, I was finally starting to like Anna Lucia right before they killed her off. So
yeah, I think got to see the irony of that. Right before the bullet leaves the gun.
No, I think it was even a whole hour before the bullet. I was starting to like her.
You were.
I was warm. I'm just warming up to her, and then they kill her off.
Yeah. Yes, you're a better man than me. Now, okay. Now I have a couple of things that I want to throw out. Okay. The island being sunk at the beginning of the episode of this season, the island was underwater, and that
we were seeing that
as
part of the Flash sideways.
Yes, so that's in the Flash sideways. Now we haven't actually set it outright, but they're dead in the Flash sideways, and that is sort of they're in purgatory. You did mention purgatory, Bob. They're in a sort of purgatory.
That's one word that's been used
before. Yeah, they're not quite in heaven yet, but they're dead, and this is an alternate plane of existence, not an alternate reality, but they're in a different spiritual realm. Now, why is the island sunk at this point? Why did they choose to show that? And that's something I've kind of wondered about. And I've come up with maybe one explanation is that we're told what the island is by Jacob in the spiritual realm, in that it's the cork on the bottle to hell. Below the island is hell, and that's where the black smoke came from. He came from hell. He's basically the devil incarnate, in a sense. Now,
and you're still insisting that he was not the same character as Jacob's brother? Because some are saying Jacob's brother became the smoke monster.
Yeah.
Others are saying the smoke monster killed Jacob's brother and then personified him like Locke.
I still think he's not Jacob's brother.
What do you think?
Quickly, I agree
Paul,
with that.
You both think... Okay, I'm going to ask you both why you don't think that and let Mark continue with his theories when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with Mark Boobian and Paul Drivas discussing Lost. And Mark, you were talking about the meaning of the island and why you thought the island was sunk in the Flash sideways
of the
or purgatory or whatever the heck
in
the thing was.
In the alternate plane.
The alternate something or other.
Pseudo-purgatory, let's call it that, I think would be the best way to put it. I think it is a purgatory in a sense. I think also the island symbolically acts as a purgatory as well, but that would be yet a whole other show because that would take forever to talk about. But in the case of the island, at one point Jack is told by his father, Australia is hell. Actually, no, Jack's father tells Sawyer, Australia is hell. Now, we know when they get to LAX in the final season that that is a sort of one step away from heaven. So there's the down under being sort of the hell symbol and the LAX being the...
Well, the Aussies must love that analogy.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what they get for calling it down under. So the island is in between. So that fits in with it being the cork on hell in a sense. This is all purely figurative or symbolic. Now, however, it being underwater, one of the scriptural references to hell is that it's called the abyss. I think that's a Jewish terminology for hell. One of the words,
yes. That's where Satan will be locked up into the abyss for 1,000 years, we're told.
There you go. And so the island has sunken into the abyss. While there, when they are dead and in heaven, or the next step from heaven, the island is in its proper place in the abyss. So that's what I think the
sunken island
represents.
It seems like there's an awful lot of mythology about the island, the origin of Jacob, that we never heard. They could come up with a whole series. I was expecting a lot more back mythology this last year. What do you think, Paul?
A little bit, especially with the Jacob character, because they introduced him so late, and of all the characters, we can't say for sure because we don't really know him all that well. He is by far, might be the most complex character in the entire series. Like, what is his true nature? What is his power? How does he get his power? We kind of find out that he gets his power from the island, because when they remove the cork in the finale, the smoke monster is mortal and able to be, basically he's Jack fighting Locke. But yeah, they definitely could have gone much deeper. That's my one
problem. We don't know who that woman that lived on the island before him, we don't know who she is.
Right.
And also, they never, talk about loose threads, they never explained the others. The others were obviously a group of people under Jacob's dominion, but they never explained why
Jacob formed
the others, who they were.
I think, well, that ties in with something else that we hear, and we heard Jacob say it, the episode where we are introduced to Jacob and the man in black. They have a discussion. The man in black says of the people on the island that they come, they fight, they destroy, they corrupt, and it always ends the same. And Jacob says to him, it only ends once, and everything before that is progress. Now, we hear the exact same refrain, they come, they fight, they destroy, they corrupt, it always ends the same, from the mother of Jacob and the man in black when the man in black was still human, so to speak. And so that's where he gets that idea from. But that's what they're taught. Now, Jacob, however, says the man in black is wrong, that they're wrong. That is not all there is to it. It doesn't always end the same. I think when he says it only ends once, he's talking about death and everything before that is progress towards salvation, so to speak. I think that's what he means. But I think what really is going on in the last season, and maybe throughout the show, is the smoke monster is trying to escape the island. He's using these people. He's doing everything he can to get off. While Jacob, on the other hand, is trying to prove to the smoke monster that there is more to humanity than corruption.
So the others would be part of his proof?
Yes, part of that. And then everybody. I mean, now we see everybody do good and evil. The Dharma people, for example, they greet you with the term namaste, which is a Indian term for I recognize the God in you, or I recognize the divine nature in you. Now, as Christians, obviously, we're not going to like that per se, but they're saying, you are a good and wondrous being, in a sense, and I'm recognizing that with the term namaste. Yet, they're at war with the others. They fight amongst themselves. You can never forget that jerk that was drilling into the place where they dropped the nuclear bomb at the end, where it would cause the accident. That one guy with the beard that was such a total jerk. Like, yeah, namaste, dude. I follow you there. So it seems like the man in black is right, except that what we see the people from flight, from the oceanic flight, they are willing to sacrifice themselves for each other. They're willing to do more. There's more to life than just being corrupt, corrupting things, being sinful, I guess, would be one kind of one word to pull it all together. They're talking about sin. And in a sense, yeah, we are sinful, but there's more to us than just the sin nature, the sinfulness. And I think that's what Jacob wants to show the man in black and what ultimately gets proven in the series. And I think one of the symbols we see of that is in Ajira, the flight number is 316, 316, which is the most quoted Christian verse ever from the Bible, and I don't think it's a mistake that the flight is numbered 316, and it's for God so loved the world, he sent his only son. And
gosh,
that's the
return. Never ever thought about that.
I never noticed that. Wow.
Yeah, and I actually was looking all around for the other flight number, and I'm not going through the whole Bible to see if that.
Now, in the last few minutes, why again are both of you convinced that the smoke monster is a separate person than Jacob's brother? Because Jacob said, "I made him what he is." And okay. He was referring to the smoke monster. So
I think that Jacob released the smoke monster from hell.
So that's what he means. He's not referring to his brother.
It's his fault that the smoke monster escaped. But his brother is clearly dead at the end. Jacob says the words, "Goodbye, brother," to the dead body and buries his brother. So I'm pretty sure that's a clean break right there. The other thing is Jack passes through there alive and then he walks off to die at the very end of the show. The brother did not. The brother died. So the brother is very much not alive.
Well, they did show him being buried. So that's, I was just a little confused by that.
Yeah, and it's not clear. I mean, I could be totally wrong. The producers could have intended it to be that persona.
What are some other loose threads that both of you have seen that were not tied up that people will continue to debate about?
For me, it's the true nature of Jacob. What he is, was he just a human that happened to get his powers from the island, or was he something more? How was he able to leave the island? I kind of think he wasn't actually leave the island. It was just a manifestation through the lighthouse to project himself off the island. That's the big one for me, is why just Jacob in general. And there's so many untied loose ends with him, and that's what I'm going to be thinking about most as I continue to think about Lost.
Okay, and Mark, you had mentioned Walt. What are some of the other loose ends that you didn't see tied up?
I think one of the interesting things is that that Jacob made the rules of the island that nobody could come and go except from a certain angle of approach, for example.
Yeah, but which puts you in Iraq or something like that.
Yeah, the island, though, has these magnetic properties, so there is some kind of scientific element to the island. And I think those aspects to the show where the science and the spirituality or the mythology kind of come and go, they intermix and intertwine, those are where I would have my questions. I'm not going to name one specific thing.
I found it interesting that they were talking about having Iraq be one of the entry points, because Iraq is where the Garden of Eden was. And I was expecting this island to be the Garden of Eden. I'm glad it wasn't, though, because I wrote a play that ended like that. And if that had happened, I would have been one
sad panda.
Hey,
but you could have sued for
panda.
A lot of money.
I suppose I could have.
Yeah, hey.
Since I portrayed that play at many college campuses where film majors and
there
drama students
go,
could have
Bob.
Seen it and swiped the idea. But I was very glad it did not have that ending. But I thought we were going to hear something with the Iraq Garden of Eden angle. I was just waiting for that.
Yeah, I really think they explained the island as being the cork on the bottle to hell, so to speak, and that keys in with the mythology of the smoke monster being the devil, and you don't want the devil to get out into the world, and it's through love that they stop him from coming. They're the loving sacrifice of many people throughout the show that they make these sacrifices, and that's what ultimately they all work together to keep the smoke monster on the island. And again, I think that goes back to disproving the idea that we are only corrupt. We only come, we only fight, we only destroy. That's all we do. That's not all we do. We are more than that. And that is why John 3:16, Flight 3:16, whatever you want to call it, exists, that God so loved the world. If we were only sinful and corrupt, God wouldn't. So I think that's one of the nice things about Lost, is it shows us the kind of the good and the bad of humanity. And even Linus, his unwillingness to enter the church at the end, we mentioned that earlier, that his heart, it's almost like, it's not that he didn't feel worthy, but it's that his heart wasn't quite right with God at that point. I kind of got that impression more than, I'm not worthy to enter at all.
He's got to work a few things out.
Yeah,
I think that's why Hurley said, "I'll see you soon," or "I'll see you later."
Yeah, I'll see you later. Okay, that's right. That's what he says. And
so he was talking.
And there is some sort of redemption that occurs in Linus's life, because Hurley says to him, "Dude, you were an awesome number two, you know, and only the way."
Yeah. So here was this great big story about the two of them watching the island for years that we never saw. So.
Yeah, that could be Lost Part Two.
I hope not. I hope they don't ruin it by making a sequel.
No, I don't think they will. They know enough.
They wouldn't. If ABC owns any of the rights, they would do it in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
But.
Yeah.
don't think J.J. Abrams would
It would be fun to see Hurley continue on, Hurley and Linus continue on, to be honest.
That might have to be a half-hour sitcom, though.
Yeah,
it could end
exactly
up being The Adventures of Abbott and
totally
Costello,
be the odd couple on an island.
Yeah, that would actually, that might work, you know, sort of the Bob Newhart show, and then Hurley wakes up. I just dreamed this whole island thing at the end.
Well, but listen, if you, those of you that are listening, and if this all sounded like Greek to you, you have an opportunity to go out on DVD and get this. Mark and I are both writers. You know how critical we are of other people's writings and with all the movies we've reviewed over all these years. And we're both telling you this was just about, if not the best drama ever on television, much better than many movies that I've seen. Go out and rent this thing on Blu-ray, on DVD. It's one of the most wonderful shows that has ever been on television. And if you're a Christian, you're going to see a positive portrayal of Christianity, but never a more positive portrayal than you hear on the Bob Siegel Show every week. And I will see you next week.